Welcome to this morning's episode of Smart Citizen. I'm so glad that you're here for this interview with Jody Wagner, who's a candidate for mayor here in Virginia Beach. I'm Emily Bowes, and this is Smart Citizen. Jody, thank you so much for being on with me this morning. I am glad to get to meet you and would love to get to know a little bit more about you. So can you tell us a little bit of your background and why you decided to run for mayor?
Good morning, Emily. Thank you for doing this. It's really a great service you're providing to the Virginia Beach community. So I really appreciate it, and I'm sure that my fellow candidates do too.
Thank you.
Let me give you a little bit of history. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland, and I grew up in a family that was really financially challenged. And in fact, when times were bad, we were really downright poor. We went through a period of time when my mom had one dress, and she wore that dress every Sunday to Sunday school where she taught. And my brother and I were sort of brats, and we used to go, "Mom, not that dress again. Don't wear that dress." But I was fortunate. My community had a great public school system. So I went off and became the first child in my family to graduate from college. And in fact, I had gone to college to teach social studies to high school students. And when I got to college, there was a class on teaching law to high school students. And it had a practical part where we went into the classroom and taught. And I discovered two things. First, I am not a very good teacher. And second, I really thought the law was fascinating. So I ended up going to law school. And when I finished, I practiced in Nashville, Tennessee. This was back in 1980 when there weren't many women lawyers in Nashville. So it was a little bit challenging. Ran into things like there were eating clubs similar to the Town Center Club or Town, I think that's the city
Town Club. Point Club?
The Town Point Club downtown. And then there's this club in Town Center.
Oh, okay.
The Mount Hafler building. Back in the day in Nashville, Tennessee, women couldn't join those clubs. And so we had to actually have our husbands join. And then we got to sit in the ladies' room because you couldn't sit in the main dining room. So that's how things were. So roll forward, 3 years after I had started practicing in Nashville, we moved to Norfolk, Virginia, because my husband became a resident with Eastern Virginia Medical School. And Norfolk was actually much more progressive. When I got here, women could join clubs and they could eat in the main dining room. And in fact, people looked at me when I was like, "Are you sure I can go in there?" And they were like, "What is wrong with you?" was glad to, you know, to I became a lawyer with Kaufman and Knowles. And I had always thought that I had an obligation to give back to the community. Fortunately, Kaufman and Knowles shared that attitude and was willing to both give me the time to do it and give me the connections to do it. So I spent a lot of time doing volunteer work. One of my favorite positions was serving as the chair of the fund distribution process for the United Way. I had done it first as the chair of the youth services division because I've always had a passion for helping provide after school activities and things for students so that they don't become, you know, get into trouble as latchkey kids. So I did that in 1990, and that was my first experience dealing with a budget shortfall because that was a recession, and we had our first experience. We had to actually reduce the amount that we were funding to agencies. In 2002, I continued to practice law. In 2002, Mark Warner became governor, and I'd gotten to know him earlier, and he called and asked me to serve as state treasurer. And when he asked me, he said, "Jody, we know we're facing a budget shortfall. Governor Gilmore, who was the governor that was leaving office, says it's about $400 million. Well, when we got to Richmond, we found out that it was $8 billion.
Oh, wow.
So
it was a lot of money.
Yeah, it was a lot of money. So we had to cut, and we cut agencies. We did strategic cuts. Not everybody got cut the same thing. It really depended. You had to do a plan and show what your agency would look like at different levels of cut. Treasury, which is what I was in charge of, was cut 23%. And in developing our plan, our team had to get together and figure out how we could still provide the same services to citizens with less money. And the challenge, particularly in an agency like Treasury, is there's not much that's optional. You can't say, "Well, we're not going to invest the cash this time, or we're not going to issue debt or whatever." So we had to keep the same services up. We did it, and in addition, when we came to Richmond, we were told that Virginia's AAA credit rating, which is truly coveted, similar to the Virginia Beach City's credit rating of a AAA, was on credit watch, and we were likely to get a downgrade. So we had to put a team together and we did it with agency heads, legislators, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, the governor's cabinet, and we all went to, crafted a plan, took it to the rating agencies in New York, convinced them that we were not a bad credit risk, and we maintained the AAA credit rating. At the end of that administration, Virginia was recognized as the best managed state and the best state in which to do business. So I was getting ready to come home. We have four kids, and my husband had been great about taking care of, two of them were still at home, two were at college. And Tim Kaine contacted me and asked me if I would serve as the Secretary of Finance. And the hierarchy in state government is the Secretary of Finance reports, is the cabinet secretary that, that supervises Treasury, planning and budget, tax, and the comptroller. So I said, you know, I'm really not sure I can do that. My husband's been great, but my kids, you know, I feel like I really have an obligation to go home. So Tim is very crafty. He actually called my youngest son, Max, and asked Max if it was okay for me to stay in Richmond and help out the state. So Max said yes, and so I spent the next 3 years as Secretary of Finance. And again, during that period, we faced a recession. And so we had to, again, strategically cut budgets. But we also were able to find a way to make historic investments in higher education. So during that administration, we built the TCC Virginia Beach Library. We funded that. We built the medical school, for Eastern Virginia Medical School, and a variety of other projects around the state for higher ed. So at the end of that administration, we were recognized as the best state to do business in and the best state in which to raise a child. So I came back to Virginia Beach, and really we had started a small popcorn company called Jody's Popcorn. It began as a retail shop at Laskin Road right across from the King Neptune. And I set about trying to grow that business. And we've really transformed it in the past, 11 years. We've gone from being a retail store, which had two locations at the time, to being a manufacturing company that manufactures for wholesale. And we sell all over the United States and a little bit into Europe and Iceland. In fact, we just shipped 10 pallets to Iceland.
That's fun.
So we employ about 35 diverse workers. And I can tell you that in our manufacturing facility, I know that you're doing recruitment for manufacturing. Probably the most important people in the plant are the people that can operate the machinery, because it is.
Oh, yeah.
I can't do. And if you can't bag your popcorn, you might as well not make it. So anyhow, I was doing that, and we were growing the business, and everything was cooking along fine. And some people approached me to look at running for mayor of Virginia Beach. And I started looking at the issues facing the city. And, you know, right now we're in challenging times. We've got a recession. We're facing COVID. And it looks like if Virginia follows the national trend, we're going to see an increase in COVID cases over the next several months. We have a big challenge in flooding that we have hardly addressed. We've done a lot of studying, but we have to do a lot of implementation and mitigation. We have schools that are deteriorating. You know, Virginia Beach went through a huge growth boom in the 50s and 60s. And that's great. So we added a lot of schools, but now those schools are 50 and 60 years old. So we start renovating them. At the rate that the city council is currently paying for renovations of schools pre-COVID, we would have at least half of the schools that have been identified as needing renovation, which is about 15 schools, at least half of them would be 100 years old before they would be renovated or replaced. And then during COVID, they cut the funding in half. So I don't even know what that math looks like, but it's definitely not where we need to be. And the challenge with schools that aren't being modernized is that it creates disparate education. You know, it's not really, you know, the child that goes to a brand new school has an entirely different experience than the child that's in a school that's 60 years old, particularly when you get to high school, middle school and high school. And then it also affects property values. If you're looking at moving into a neighborhood and you know you've got, you know, children that are going to be using the public schools, you look at what kind of schools they are and what they look like. So all those are issues that the city has to address. We're also in a time where we have, you know, long needed reckoning with race relations and race and social justice issues that needs to be addressed by the city. So that we're facing some challenges. We've also got a real need for a different kind of economic development. You know, over the past several years, economic development in Virginia Beach has really focused on tourism and the resort. And that's great, and it's made some great improvements, but we really need to focus on bringing some diverse industries into the area. Mm. We can't, you know, as we've seen with COVID, tourism is insecure. And as we've seen with BRAC, the military is insecure. We can lose a Navy base at any point. So we need to work to protect those two industries, but we really need to diversify and add additional industries. I believe that we need to go after knowledge-based industries that are going to bring our college kids back, that are give them an opportunity to, you know, come home, work, do things that they've really learned how to do. I have four children. Only one of them is living at home right now. Not with me, but I mean, is living in Hampton Roads. Mm. The other three are literally spread out around the United States. The exciting thing is we've got these subsea cables that are coming into Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. The fastest internet in the country. So we need to really market that and make sure that we take advantage of that and get all of the opportunity to bring jobs to this area. And COVID has taught us that you can live here and work there. Well, you can also put your facility here and provide services there. So we need to encourage people to do that.
That's a great point.
So I think we've got a lot of opportunity. I'm running to address the problems that we have and to build on the opportunities. And I'll be glad to answer your questions.
Awesome. Well, that was such a great intro. There's so many things there that I would love to ask you questions about. One big thing that I've tried to focus on with Smart Citizen is helping people understand local government a little bit more. And I'll be honest, I have found it a little challenging to find a lot of detail about what the role of the mayor specifically is in our structure of government, because in Virginia Beach, because before I got into this, I thought that, city level government kind of reflected state or federal level, where you have the president, the Congress, the governor, and the General Assembly, and then the mayor and the city council. And I thought that that's just kind of how it worked its way down. And then I realized that's not how it works, at least in Virginia. I think it does work that way in some places, but no. None of the city, all of the cities in Virginia except Richmond have this mayor or this manager council model. So what is the specific role of the mayor within our city government? And why do you think it's important for people to be engaged in understanding who the mayor is and what their role is and why they're significant?
Okay, so first of all, for your listeners that aren't quite as haven't done as much studying as you, a city manager form of government means that most of the power, most of the implementation lies in the hands of the city manager. It is city council's job to set policy and to set goals. So, for example, if city council decides that we should invest more in the ocean, in the Atlantic Avenue between 15th and 25th, which I think they just recently did, and wisely so, because it's been neglected for a long time. So they set that policy and they say, okay, we're going to invest X million dollars in doing it. Then it's and these are the things we want to accomplish. Then it's up to the city manager to do it, to actually work with the agency, the department heads beneath him, and make sure that it happens.
I've heard it described as being like the city council being like the board and the city manager being like the CEO, because the council selects the manager, but then the manager kind of executes on the will of the council, if you will, or the policy decisions of the council.
I think that's exactly right. It's exactly the right description. And I view the job of the mayor as being two things. One, sort of chairman of the board. So the mayor runs the city council meetings, but he also, or she, and I'm hoping it's a she, also works on getting city council to come together on issues. Mm. You know, there should be a lot of discussion prior to an issue, a significant issue coming up, so that everybody understands the background, where we can go, what we can do, what our goals ought to be. I believe that it's the mayor's job to have tons of conversations with city council members, dealing with the issues that are facing the cities, so that we can accomplish the things that Virginia Beach is divided into seven different districts, right? So there's a city councilman for each of those districts. Like you have the Rose Hall district, the Lynn Haven district.
Right.
So we need to understand and work with the people that are representing those districts on what's important to their citizens. But then they also have to understand what's important to the whole city. So I think the job of the mayor is to work with all of the city council members, but it's also to be an accountability partner with the city manager, to be working with the city manager on how it's coming. You know, here's, you know, we set a goal of investing, $6 million in the Atlantic Avenue. How are we doing? How, you know, has the plan been drawn up? How close are we to hitting the targets of being open by next spring, et cetera? And it also, I think, is the job of the mayor to be a cheerleader for the city, to be both cheerleader in terms of economic development, cheerleader in terms of addressing issues. It needs to be the face that steps forward when there's a problem. You know, one of the big disappointments in the current mayor is that when the Black Lives Matter marches began, he didn't address the protesters. He didn't say, look, our police aren't Minneapolis police. You know, we don't do chokeholds. You know, here are our policies. And if there are things that you think we need to be doing, let's talk about them. Let's discuss them. He was dead silent. And that's not the role of the mayor in my mind. The role of the mayor is to be out there and to be very visible addressing the issues.
That's a great point. And I know we want to get into talking about some of the police department things and some of that. So we'll certainly get to that. One more question on mayor. One thing I feel like I've observed just through COVID, or the impression I've had, I guess you could say, is that it also seems like the mayor is kind of the advocate for or lobbyist for the city to the state government as well. You know, like speaking to the governor on behalf of the city or that type of thing. Is that accurate?
Yes. And the mayor should also be speaking to a lot of other people. I believe that a lot of our problems are going to take cooperation of the federal and state government. And that's why I think it's so helpful that I have a great relationship with Senators Kane and Warner. I worked for both of them. They both endorsed my candidacy. Congresswoman Lurie has endorsed my candidacy. But in addition, I have been endorsed by every statewide, office hold elected official in Virginia. Mm. So the governor, the attorney general, the lieutenant governor, and the Speaker of the House. And when we have issues that we need addressed in Washington or in Richmond, I'm going to be able to use those relationships to help get Virginia what we need. And I'm not embarrassed of those relationships. I think that they're going to be very helpful. But I do believe that it's not just the mayor, but city council's responsibility to get to know the delegates and the state senators and to be talking about what Virginia Beach needs so that we have, you know, partners there when we need them.
I've been learning over the last couple of weeks about the Dillon Rule, being a Dillon Rule state, which is fascinating and not at all the way that I thought that, you know, state to city government functioned. So how do you see that impacting your ability to accomplish some of the things that you want to do? Is that where those relationships come in handy? Like, what's your perspective on relationship to the state?
Yeah, so in essence, the city can't do anything unless it's given the authority to do it by the state.
Right.
Frankly, I think it's a crazy system, but it is what it is.
Well, and it's not just that you have to, it's what I thought it would be is like, so the governor says you can't do something, but you could do everything else. But it's almost the opposite. It's like, unless they say yes expressly, you can't touch it. Is that right?
That's right. For example, up until last year, Virginia Beach could not have given tax credits for mitigation of done to protect against flooding. In 2019, the General Assembly passed a law, and this governor signed it, that says that localities can give tax credits for mitigation. So now we can do it. So it is a system that is really very controlled by the state. And some people think that's great. For example, I've had real estate developers that tell me that it's wonderful because then they don't have to learn a bunch of different rules, that it's consistent throughout the state.
I see.
So there are probably some advantages, but from a local perspective, it really ties the hands of city council. So it means that we have to have a great relationship with our delegates, our senators, and the executive branch, because if we want to do something, we really have to ask our parent for permission, which is you know.
Yeah.
We could argue about whether that makes sense, but that's the way the Constitution
It's a very, very interesting thing. And I think a lot of people's frustrations with the mayor or the city council are probably things related to that. At least that's what I've heard, where people are like, why don't they go against this or that thing that the governor has said? Because, like, if our city doesn't want that, then maybe, you know, we should be able to say. That's kind of like how people think our system. It's the more, I guess, sort of federalist idea of like power being distributed down to the local levels. But that's just not the way it works here, which I found super interesting. I want to ask you one question really quickly, because I know we've gone through quite a bit of our time. There's a lot we want to get to, but just partially just out of my own curiosity, you mentioned the AAA credit rating, and I saw on your website, and you mentioned it briefly, like some of the investments that the state does, and just on a learning level. So a AAA credit rating, is that like a state version of my credit score? Like, is that kind of like having your credit score on a personal level, but on a state level, or what does that actually mean?
Okay. So when you issue bonds, when a state or city issues bonds, they can, and they normally do, go to the credit rating agencies to have their bonds rated. And the best rating we can get is a AAA. And in Virginia, we actually have, and in the city of Virginia Beach too, we actually have the highest rating by their three rating agencies. And all three rating agencies have rated Virginia and Virginia Beach the highest that they can. Okay. But quite honestly, there's nothing horrible about a state or a city that has a lower rating. It makes it a little more expensive for them to sell their bonds. You certainly wouldn't want to be at the junk level. You wouldn't want to be at a B level or a C level. But you know, it is a balance. And when I was in state government, we actually had a very complicated formula that we went through to determine how much the state could borrow every year, and set that as the standard and compared ourselves to other AAA rated states, because we didn't want to get with beyond those parameters. I think the city does something similar to that, but in order to stay in sync. But there are a lot of factors that go into credit rating. And for example, one of them is how resilient is your economy? You know, if our economy is not diverse, that sort of counts against us. How are you dealing with flooding? Are you at a great risk for flooding? That would be a negative. Okay. How good are your schools? All those factors go into the credit rating for a locality.
Fascinating. And then that allows us to then borrow money towards things we may need, flood mitigation or other things as a city.
Absolutely.
And, Got it.
But even if we had a slightly lower rating, we could still borrow. It would just be more expensive.
Okay. So it is in some sense similar. It's not measured necessarily on the same things, but it's like if I have a bad credit score as a person, it's going to cost, the interest rates will be much higher for me to borrow money, or it might be harder for me to get approved for an expensive house or something like that.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the larger version. And what do investments look like on a state level? Is that like investing in the stock market? Is it investing in businesses? Like, what kind of things does a state invest in?
So the state has very strict rules on what we can invest in.
Okay.
And it's a diverse portfolio that is handled by several managers. In fact, we had eight people that managed the cash for the state.
Wow.
Figured out what we were going to invest it in. We don't do the long-term investments. That is handled by, or Treasury doesn't. The Virginia Retirement System handles long-term things. So they'll invest in private equity and stuff like that.
Okay.
The cash that's invested by the state is invested in short-term pieces of paper, or so that we can get the money back quickly. So it is invested in different funds, but it's done on a very short-term and a very safe basis.
That's really interesting. It just wasn't something I had thought about before reading it on your bio, that states would be in the business of investing. It makes a lot of sense. It's just not something that ever crosses your mind. Yeah. So, Let's just talk about the police reform issue, because I know that was something that you wanted to speak to and you brought up before. So what's your perspective on our police department? Because I think there are some misconceptions floating around if people don't know what the state of our police department is right now. And so where do you see our police department being now? Are there any things that you want to see change going forward? And what's your position on defunding the police, which I think is a very broad term. So even if that is something you're for, would you define that?
Okay. So first of all, we have a very well-trained police department. We're fortunate. They receive much more training than is required by the state, so they go above and beyond. I have actually watched the police over the summer of time deal with some of the hostile, they weren't really protesters. It wasn't during a protest, but some of the people down at the oceanfront that were upset, they took a lot of verbal abuse, which was inappropriate. They were called to horrible things, but they maintained their cool. They were very professional. I was very, very impressed. We are lucky. We've got a well-trained police force, but we're challenged for two reasons. First, this police force has been underfunded. And as a result, we're having problems with retention and recruitment. On the retention side, we are down about 15% of our officers from what the budget allows. So that means that we're having trouble keeping them, which means probably we're not paying them enough. I don't think it's the work environment, so it's probably the pay. So we need to address those issues. Second, we don't really have a very diverse police department. We ask our police to do community policing, but it's very hard to community police when the police don't look like the community. To put some real numbers behind that, Virginia Beach is 20% African-American, but our police force is only 7% African-American. So it's, you know, that's something that we need to really up our game on and really recruit a diverse police force. And there are a couple ways to do that. One is to have a cadet program so that we can take students when they come out of high school, expose them to the police, to the opportunities in policing. And the second thing that is to really actively recruit minorities where they're coming at, where they're becoming available. So when they get out of the military, you know, the military has a very diverse workforce. We should be looking at that as a place where we can capture some very good candidates for police officers. So those are challenges. In the most recent budget that was passed by City Council and the mayor, the police force was actually cut by 11 officers, which is sort of surprising to me. I don't really, you know, we actually, on a nationwide average, there's over two policemen per 1,000 people in a city our size. In Virginia Beach, we're at about 1.7 police officers per 1,000 people. So I don't really know why they took away officers. I'd like to understand that better. But, you know, right now the mayor is putting forth the thing, this perception that he is for, you know, fully funding the police and I'm for defunding them. That's crazy. First of all, I am not for defunding the police. I feel strongly that we need to have a well-trained police force. But I do think it has to be a police force that reflects the community.
I've heard some interesting conversation in relation to the school board and the equity policy there and the boards that are determining some of that. Some of the people running for school board have suggested that diversity on the school board side is only being looked at in terms of white and black or white and African-American. And they're asking for representation for the Latin population, for the Asian, you know, which I guess is the third largest after African-American. And then, you know, we obviously have a really large Filipino population here and other Asian communities. Do you know how, because obviously, you know, the African-American community is extremely important and is, I think, our largest minority group. Is that right?
That's correct. So Virginia Beach is about 67% white.
Okay.
About 20% black, and the rest is split between the Latinx and Asian populations.
Okay. Do you know how we do in terms of representing those other minority groups?
Do you mean on the boards?
Or on the police force. I'm sorry, I didn't tie that in very well. Yeah, because you were talking about diversity in the police force, and so it connected in my mind, but I didn't connect it for you. Sorry.
They're underrepresented also.
Okay.
And I don't remember the exact specifics, but they're definitely underrepresented also.
Okay. So just generally diversity in the police force would be a big step forward.
Absolutely. And we should have diversity in all of the departments in the city government, you know, from the school system to the, you know, people that work in the human relations office. I mean, everywhere we should have a diverse representation to the extent that we can achieve it.
Right. Absolutely. Let's talk about COVID response. So what do you think the city has done well in terms of COVID response so far? And what would you change or what do you see, you know, as far as COVID response? What would you do as far as COVID response if you were elected?
Well, you know, first of all, we were all, I mean, everybody from the federal, you know, government all the way down to the cities were struggling at the beginning on how to get our arms around it, how people should react, what we should do. Mm-hmm. But now we're 6 months in, right? Or I think it's been at least 6 months.
March. Long time, forever.
So, you know, now we should be pretty transparent. Virginia Beach has not done a great job of being clear to businesses on what they can and can't do. It was particularly bad right when COVID hit, when the shutdown happened. I've talked to a lot of small business owners that would call the city and ask, you know, I'm a dog, what do you call them?
Groomer,
thank you. I'm a dog groomer. Am I essential? Can I be opened? And they kept getting pointed in directions. I don't know, call them. I don't know, call the state. So we really need to work harder to have one central office or central point of contact that would solve those problems, pointing people in different directions. It has not been very transparent where you can get testing. Sentara, you know, provided some information, but the city wasn't putting out a lot of information. We even today, to get statistics on how Virginia Beach is doing in our transmission rates, you really have to hunt on the state website to get that, or you go to Bobby Dyer's Facebook page. Neither of those is acceptable. We really need to have, there should be a scorecard right on the front of the city's page that would tell you how Virginia Beach is doing, and then maybe how our region is doing as compared to the state. Because, you know, how we're doing is going to affect a lot of what we do over the next 6 months. It'll affect whether our kids go back to school. It affects whether we're comfortable having, you know, traveling, having people come into Virginia and Virginia Beach. So I think we need to do a much better job of communicating the facts and communicate. And we still need a very robust campaign on protective efforts. You know, we need to be making sure that people don't forget. It's easy to forget those face masks. I've gotten out of my car, walked all the way up to the door of a store, and then went and ran back and got this. But we need to be, you know, we need to be continually reminding people that even in their social engagements, you know, Saturday night, my husband and I were home and my son and daughter-in-law were here. And then the doorbell rang and another family came by, cousins that came by. Actually, they brought me petit fours to wish me luck in the election.
That was kind.
And you know, they came in the house and then my son goes, outside, we're going out on the back porch. You know, we're all going to be outside. And, you know, sort of pushed us outside because it's safer. He's a doctor. And it's safer, okay, you know, outside than in a closed space. Not that, you know, hopefully nobody had COVID or was contagious, but you never know. So I think we need to be continually reminding people. And that is a role that city council and the mayor should be playing of really trying to keep Virginia Beach citizens safe.
You mentioned Virginia Beach in regard to the region, and I saw some things about regionalism on your website. So what does that mean and how would that affect your role as mayor?
Okay. Well, so for starters, except for people that look at a map a lot, it's very hard to see where Virginia Beach ends and Chesapeake starts, or Virginia Beach ends and Norfolk starts. And that's probably a good thing. We need to be working together with our fellow communities to promote economic development, to promote healthy living, you know, to deal with COVID. I mean, no city can solve those problems alone because we're so closely located. And with regard to economic development, if we work together, we can accomplish so much more. I believe that while I would love Virginia Beach to get every employer that's coming to the area, I recognize that you know, some of them may not make sense to be in Virginia Beach. It may make more sense for them to put their facility in Chesapeake. Well, if they put it in Chesapeake, that's okay, because I'm willing to bet you that due to the quality of life offered in Virginia Beach, a lot of their employees are going to live in Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. So we need to promote regionalism. Nothing is worse than to have an employer looking at the area and to have four localities in the area all trying to badmouth the others so that they can get the business. Ultimately, that employer gets so confused, he says, I'm out of here, I'll go to Richmond. So we need to be speaking with one voice. And I think that it's gotten better, but I think that there's still a lot of room to improve our regional efforts.
You've mentioned brain drain, or that idea creating, you said, knowledge-based work options for people. So talking about, I guess, twofold, economic development and providing those opportunities, because I think that is what provides those opportunities for people to come back. What would you be doing to try to promote that as mayor, or what do you see as some of those opportunities?
Okay. Well, as I said earlier, because we're going to have fast internet, we should be going out and seeking the employers that have a workforce that doesn't have to physically be in a city, but can be providing the information, you know, the work product. And that can be everything from architectural designers to people that do creative mm-hmm. items, to people that are working in finance. So there's a whole broad swath of people that we should be attracting. And we need to create an environment where we're a hip enough community that people want to be here. And millennials have certain things that they really look for, you know, diverse restaurants, the arts under normal circumstances, pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. So we need to promote and we need to work with our fellow cities to have those kinds of things. It'd be great if we could attract a major sports team here. That would really enhance the area and make mm-hmm. it more positive to attract a business. Something that nobody really talks about is that we have an airport that does not have any hangar space. So if I was the Norfolk Airport has one fixed base operator. Most airports have more than one.
Okay.
And that fixed base operator is out of hangar space. So there is a waiting list that is about 10 or 12 planes long waiting for space. So if I owned a company and I wanted to move my headquarters here and our CEO couldn't have a airplane based here, that would give me pause. I would say that's a negative. So we need to look at all those little things that add up to determine whether or not Virginia Beach and Norfolk and Hampton Roads are attractive.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I successfully convinced my brother and sister-in-law to move here from Denver, which is, I mean, an incredible city in terms of culture, in terms of opportunity, industry. There's a huge airport, you know, all of this, public transit. It has all the things. It has no affordable housing at all for a young family. So that's a huge, huge reason that they're moving, is they have really good jobs and can't buy a house for their family. And so we convinced them to come over. But those are very real things that you listed that people are looking for. One other big one I would say from my own experience is public transit. I moved here from New York City without a car, and I didn't have a car for 9 months. And I never lived in a place where I had any access to public transit. People told me not to ride my bike because it was dangerous. There were not bike paths, and that people here don't know how to interact with cyclists. It was very challenging. I had very generous friends that drove me places. That was the only way I was able to get around. And then I did some remote work as well. So do you have any ideas for addressing public transportation here? I've heard quite a few thrown out by different city council candidates, but what are your thoughts as far as public transit?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that we have a huge problem. And it's not just millennials like you that want public transportation. I've gotten beaten up at forums by senior citizens who—
Absolutely.
Look, I can't see to drive, you know. And it's people that can't afford to have a car. So there are a whole host of reasons that we need to have a strong public transportation. Mm-hmm. I don't have the solutions. I know that we tried, I was a proponent of light rail. Due to an effort by the Tea Party group, it failed and the resolution failed. I don't know were you living here then?
I was. And I've never fully understood the light rail thing. It seemed like it got very political and that it was very expensive. That was the reason that I heard against it. I came from cities that have a lot of public transit. So what I was able to learn about it, I thought that it made sense, but the cost of, because I believe the one in Norfolk is like the most heavily subsidized public transit in the state, maybe, that it's just extremely expensive for it to operate. So that was kind of the reason that I heard that it wasn't particularly a good idea, but I'd be happy to hear more about it, because I've always wondered why it seems like people are so polarized around that issue.
Yeah. Well, I think at this point we need to sort of accept the fact that Virginia Beach has rejected it.
Right.
I think trying to bring it back right now would be an uphill battle that isn't worth fighting.
Yeah.
But we still own the land. You know, we bought the Norfolk Southern right away, which is where we were going to put the light rail. So we need to think about whether there's anything we can do with that in right now. You know, are we better off? Can we do fast buses on it? Can we make it a fast bus line? Can we make it available for bicyclists? I don't know the right answer. We need to start looking. And I'm sure somebody in the city is looking at that. But when you're a candidate for mayor, you don't have access to those people.
Right. Yeah.
So I can't tell you what the options are. What I can tell you is what I've promised to do is after I'm elected, I intend to ride a bus from my house, which is in Virginia Beach at the North End, to my place of business in Norfolk, from Norfolk, from my office to City Hall, which is, where that is, and then City Hall back home. And I'm going to see how long it takes. I've mapped it out on Google, Google Maps, and it's not going to, based on that, it's going to be a long ride, but we'll see what the reality is. And then I'm going to ask all of my fellow city council people to do the same thing so that we can all see what our citizens are going through. And then we need to get to work trying to make it better. And it isn't going to be that fast. It's going to take time, but it's got to be something that we really invest in, because it really is one of the major factors holding us back.
Let's talk about floodwater mitigation quickly, because I know that's a huge issue in Virginia Beach, and it's been a big topic of conversation during this election cycle. What would you be looking to do as far as floodwater mitigation if you were elected?
Okay. Well, first of all, to the city's credit, they've spent a lot of time studying it. They've invested about $3.8 million in a study, several studies that in the aggregate are known as the Dewberry Report. That sets forth a roadmap of what can be done. If we did all of that, it would cost $3 to $4 billion. Virginia Beach cannot finance that alone. That's a perfect example of where we really need to get our federal and state partners working together with us. I'm not sure. When I entered this race, I formed task forces to help me address some of the complicated issues. One of those task forces was on flooding, coastal flooding and resilience. And that task force came back with a lot of great suggestions. Some endorsed part of the Dewberry plan and said that there are some things in there that are very expensive and may not be worth doing. But we're going to have to look more at that. But there were also a lot of things that we can be doing. One is preserving open space, because the more open space you have, the more that the water gets sucked up into the ground. The federal government has recently passed the Outdoors, I think it's called the Great Outdoors Act. And that act is going to result in $1 billion a year going for land conservation. So Virginia Beach has got to be ready with a plan. We've got to have exactly what properties we can purchase and how we're going to do it so that we can get those dollars. I think we need somebody in the city that's a point person that's doing nothing but looking at programs like that we can participate in. On mitigation, the state actually authorized localities last year to approve tax incentives for mitigation done by landowners. So we have not adopted anything to encourage that yet, but we need to, because we need to get individual landowners doing what they can to mitigate. And that's everything from planting trees to doing what they call natural mitigation, doing different things in the land to encourage mitigation, to help soak up the water and to stop the land from sinking. So there are a lot of things that can be done. It is going to take a patchwork of solutions. And I know the city council has done a little bit, but a little bit isn't going to get us there fast enough. So I think we need to really put the pedal to the metal.
We're almost at the end of our time here. I wanted to ask you quickly something we talked about before we jumped online, is the idea that, all of these different, all of the local races are listed on the ballot as nonpartisan, but then, quite a few people are running on different party platforms or more open party platforms, including you've been heavily endorsed by the Democratic Party of Virginia. So how do you think that those party platforms or affiliations affect the local elections?
Well, I think it's definitely affected the local elections, and it wasn't just this year. I think when the city moved, historically, the city had always elected their city councilmen and school board members in May. And when it was done in May, you had a very small turnout, maybe 12% of the population turned out. Mm-hmm. It was the people that turned out were the people that cared deeply about city government.
Right.
And there was no party meddling in the election. To my recollection, there wasn't. I mean, when we moved it from May to November, and especially when we moved it, the mayor's race to be coincident with the presidential election, we picked the most partisan point of the country, you know, the presidential election, to be electing some city council members, some school board members, and the mayor. So it is foolish for us to think that national politics wouldn't bleed into the race when you're electing a president, a senator, a congressperson, and then your city officials. Each party has historically put out what they call their ticket, their endorsed candidates. So if you go to have you gone to the polls yet?
No, I'm planning to go this week.
Okay. So when you go, you'll probably be greeted by some volunteers from each party, and they'll be offering you the Democratic ballot, which coincidentally is blue. And they'll be offering you the Republican ballot, which is shockingly red.
Surprise.
And those ballots will have the candidates that they've chosen to endorse. There may even be some other ballots there. There's the Virginia Teachers Association, Virginia Beach Educators Association, that also have a ballot that they'll be sharing with you. So those are there to help guide voters. Because just like you're finding that there's an awful lot of information and it's almost overwhelming, it shouldn't be the person who has the greatest signs out there that wins. You know, there needs to be more of a vetting process. And right now, truthfully, if you didn't have any guides, if you didn't have any information, you wouldn't know anything about the candidates other than, you know, he's got a really great sign and she's got a terrible sign.
Well, and to millennials, that might actually make a difference. Yeah. You know?
It really should not be a sign war. I mean,
right. No, it shouldn't.
Frankly, if it were up to me, we would have no signs because I think that they are, they create just a huge amount of time is spent by candidates trying to get sign placement.
And, I'm sure.
And that is not really what we should be talking about. So I think it works as a guide. Now, when we get to governing, I don't think the party should be involved. And I can tell you that if I'm elected mayor, I will not govern like I'm the Democratic mayor. I will govern like I am the mayor for all of the citizens of Virginia Beach, whether they voted for me or they didn't. I'm going to be their mayor and I'm going to work hard for them.
That's a good perspective because I think because the country is so polarized right now, people, you know, when you see that level of polarization come down onto a local level, it starts to make people feel nervous that, you know, the city is going to, or the city government is going to end up very polarized in one direction or another. So I think that is a good explanation. One last question for you, and then we can wrap up. I know it seems like you're passionate about, you know, helping young people be involved. Obviously, you have your own kids. How would you encourage young people that are wanting to be involved in city government or just local things to invest in their city? Where do you think people should start if they wanted to get involved in something?
Okay. Well, there are two things that they ought to do. One is that you can go to the city's website and there's a place where you can actually put forth your information to be considered for an appointment. And the city has a plethora of boards and commissions that, that you can offer to serve on. So that's something that you ought to do. The second is that we've got a number of community organizations that are really challenging and address issues and are really fun. And in non-COVID times have great meetings that you can work and meet people. They're doing some stuff on Zoom now, but I would encourage people to figure out where their passion is. If they care about social service issues, then get involved in organizations like the United Way. Get involved in 4Kids, which is a great organization that tries to address homelessness of children. You know, there are there are so many good community organizations to be involved in. And there's actually the United Way, along with Volunteer Hampton Roads, has created a computer site or a site that can actually work as a match to match people's skills and what agencies need, you know, with some of the community organizations need.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure exactly how to get to that site, but I'll try and find it so you can share it with your viewers.
That would be great. But,
you know, that way we can use the skill sets that a volunteer has and really put it to work where it's needed.
Yeah, that would be great. I'll try to find that as well. So as we wrap up here, what would you say is one thing that you would like everyone listening to remember about you specifically as they vote this year?
I think the major thing that I would like people to remember is that I have a history of getting things done, and that is how I'm going to approach city government. I'm going to try and work very hard to actually bring things to the table and get them accomplished for you. I don't, there's a lot of talk that goes on, but that's, you know, I can only tolerate so much talk. I really believe in action. So you're going to hear a lot from me over the next 4 years if I win about what we're accomplishing and how we're getting there. When I worked with Mark Warner, he had an expression that he always said, if you're not measuring it, it doesn't get done. And it's really true in business. Mm-hmm. So if we're not, you know, in my business, we measure the number of pallets that we ship each month. That's sort of the benchmark of how much have we done. We need to be measuring different goals. If we set goals in the city, then we need to be measuring what our success is, how we're doing comparatively. And there needs to be a continual reporting on that to city council. So it's a little boring, but it's not very sexy, but it's really the way you accomplish change.
Mm. So that's a great point. You can finish, sorry.
I was just going to say, so I think if you had to like put a tagline on me, it's she gets things done.
That's great. If you want to learn more about Jody Wagner and the things that she stands for, you can go to Jody for Mayor, Jody F-O-R, mayor.com, and you can find all the ways to contact her. You can read more about her platform. And I saw you had information about some of the different task forces that you formed. That was hard to say. And you're also on social media. So you guys can check Jody out there if you want to learn more about her. Don't forget that you can listen to our entire conversations on podcasts now. If you don't have time to watch a video or you just prefer to listen, we're everywhere you can listen to podcasts, Smart Citizen podcasts. And follow Smart Citizen on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at Smart Citizen USA. And please share this with two of your friends that really want to be more informed about the mayor's race in Virginia Beach this year. Jody, thank you so much for being on with us. I really appreciated getting to know you a little bit better and hearing more about what you're running for.
Well, Emily, thank you for what you're doing. I think it really makes a difference. And I hope that after the election, you'll continue to do podcasts dealing with issues that the city's facing.
I'm planning on it. So hopefully we'll get to chat again sometime in the future. It was a great conversation.